Nuketown Radioactive number 45 for Sunday, March 11th, 2007. On this week's edition of Radioactive, I've got a cold, the baby learns to crawl, I've got podcast galore, there's a new gaming column on Nuketown, and I've got a book review of A Deepness in the Sky by Werner Vogt. Well, folks, welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I am your host, Ken Newquist. Yes, it may not sound like it's me, but it really is me. Everyone has been sick for the last 2 weeks, and they finally took me down last Tuesday. I got a nasty cold, and for the first time in 20 years, a case of pink eye. There's nothing quite like waking up in the morning with your eyes sealed shut, and it was an experience I'd hoped to never repeat, but apparently once you have kids, you get to revisit some of these old childhood illnesses. So it's been a heck of a week. Now, also on the kid front, Luke is crawling and pulling himself up, which means that we are now baby-proofing. He has a particular interest, as his sister did, in all things electronic, although he takes it to the next level by actively seeking out the vacuum cleaner while you're vacuuming in an attempt to snag the power cord. Usually, Jordan would run and hide on the sofa when we vacuumed, and didn't really like the vacuum cleaner all that much. Luke, he hears it come on, turns to it, and just decides to want to chase you around. So it's definitely much more of a challenge, and the days of just being able to put him in the middle of the room and walk away are, you know, to go get something from the kitchen are far gone. He also loves to crawl into the kitchen and immediately seek out the dog dishes, so we have to make sure that the water bowls are no longer on the floor. If you hear a little voice every once in a while, it's because my daughter Jordan is hanging out with me, listening to the podcast as I record it. You want to say hi, Jordan?
Hi.
She likes to. She really likes the podcast, and she likes the website too, right? We're going to do an interview with Jordan in another podcast, but today we're just going to talk about some other stuff that's going on the site. First of all, I've added a new column to the site, which is basically they're called game day columns, and it's basically what happens is that every Friday my friends and I get together to game, and it's almost kind of a little ritual where we start posting things that interest us, kind of getting people psyched for playing the game that night. So I kind of took that idea, and rather than just posting my thoughts to the Griff Crier, which is our campaign website, I figured, hey, you know what? I'll put these together into a column for Nuketown and just kind of polish things up a little bit and go with that. So far, I think it's been working out pretty well. Topics have included how to play like a dwarf, how to speak like a dwarf, horror gaming, Ravenloft, and just a bunch of other stuff that's usually somewhat related to the thing that we're doing that particular day. It rotates between two of our two primary campaigns right now, one of which is the Ravenloft Horror D&D campaign, and the other, which is the Dwarven Imperative, which is basically we're playing a bunch of dwarves on the Beaumarge in the world of Greyhawk, fighting orcs, and repelling the menace of the Orcish Empire. So, you know, you can check it out. New columns are posted on the website usually at some point on Friday, either at lunchtime or around 4 or 5 o'clock when I get back from work. You can check out the columns at nuketown.com/games/game day. Also on Nuketown, I have a review of Gears of War, which is a shooter for the Xbox 360 and which Jordan will tell you is a daddy game, right? That's right. So it's a very fun daddy game, and I'll leave a full review up for the site. But one thing I do want to note is that it's got an awesome cooperative mode. Basically, you can play through the entire campaign online with a friend. And this was really nice because it gave me a chance to do something that I haven't done in years with a friend of mine, Dave, from high school. And back in the day, Dave and I used to go to the arcade and play all the side-by-side shooter games. And it was great to do it then. And then, as we got older, we would play games together on the Xbox. We'd get together at each other's houses. We'd play Sega Genesis, whatever. And that's kind of fallen by the wayside over the last couple of years because we both have kids, busy lives, wives, the whole deal. So this provided us with a way to kind of have that cooperative play and to hang out together online, but without ever having to leave our living room. So that was pretty cool. I will also say that it's a very violent game, so you can't really play it around your kids, but it is a heck of a lot of fun, especially for folks who like shooters. Finally, we've got voicemail. That's right. Voicemail, guys. See, if you send it, I'll play it. Doug Rapsom from Geek Acres sent in some voicemail in which he talks about geek fitness, road tripping with young children, and comic books. So I'll play it right here.
Hey Ken, greetings from your fellow podcaster and geek dad. This is Doug from Geek Acres, and I just wanted to sound off on a couple of issues that you brought up during your two February podcasts. First of all, I am right there with you. Hang in, my brother, as far as losing the weight. I have been drinking the water for over a year and started riding my stationary bike back in January. So I've been going strong for about 4 to 5 days a week for about 2 months now, I guess. I've dropped 5 pounds, and I think I need to shake up my exercise ritual because I'm not seeing the kinds of results that you are. Urgh. As far as the family road trip goes, totally doable. Pack the kids up, plan frequent rest stops, but I took my son to Kentucky from Pennsylvania, several states, multiple hours, and we did just fine. And I must say, I bow to your comic book collection. 15 boxes? 15 boxes? I've got about a full box and one of those half boxes from my high school and college years. So I must say, that's quite an impressive collection, and I can understand why you'd be trying to free up some space. Listen, keep on doing what you do on Nuketown. I love the show, and I'll be listening.
So thanks for the feedback, Doug. I greatly appreciate it. And once I get my voice back into a more normal state, I will be sure to return the favor and send in some long-delayed comments on your own show. I have been listening to Geek Acres for a while, and I think I've mentioned it on one or two podcasts, and I know I've mentioned it on the website. So if you haven't listened, and as you may have guessed, Doug is another geek dad with a podcast. So his tends to be pretty short. It's, I think, usually runs around 15 minutes. Makes for a very easy listen at the gym or on your way to work or whatever. So definitely check it out. With regards to his comments about the exercise thing, mixing it up, I think, is a good thing. I mean, if nothing else, it helps with not getting bored. What I generally do is the treadmill, the elliptical machine, and the bike, although I obviously have the advantage of being able to go to the regular gym as opposed to having to just, say, work out in my basement or whatever. But I don't know if that's made a difference in my weight loss, but I think it certainly hasn't hurt. as far as my comic book collection goes, yeah, it is kind of huge. I think that's what happens. That's the difference between collecting sporadically and collecting steadily for, I don't know, 15 years. I guess I've got about a box for each year I've been collecting, which, yeah, way too many comics. So I have kind of paused on the purge because, well, with the sickness and everything. But eventually I will return to that because, like I say, the boxes are kind of cluttering up the gaming room and we need more space. And finally, great road trip advice. We have had frequent potty breaks in the past driving up to visit my sister in Massachusetts, or actually New Hampshire now. The problem we've encountered has been the getting off the highway and not being able to get back on it again because it's an emergency potty break and there's no obvious place to stop and go. So, and especially in the dead of winter, that's particularly problematic because you can't just, say, find a bush. but we will be doing this in the middle of summer, so hopefully our options will be a bit more flexible. Yes, folks, these are the challenges of being geek dads. Road trips are no longer just get in the car and go. Road trips are now get in the car, make sure you've packed half the house, and then go, and then stop about 15 minutes later for a potty break.
Warning. The following information is classified top secret. Well, okay, that's not true, but we think it's cool just to tell you that. The subject of this dossier is Random Signal, a podcast produced from an underground super ultra mondo secret facility located somewhere in the Durham, North Carolina area of the Mid-Atlantic United States. Its host is Jason Adams, codenamed Kryptonaut, called by some as a rebel, a geek, and a spitting image of Jane from Joss Whedon's Firefly. Random Signals, a podcast for the independent musician, offering a platform for music too good for the mainstream music industry. More data can be obtained on the Random Signal at randomsignal.com. It is your mission to fill your podcatching client with many episodes of Random Signal, a podcast that is so totally Airwolf that Ernest Borgnine is starting up a Backstreet Boys tribute band just so he can get an interview on it. Subscribing to Random Signal is your first priority. End of file.
So, I've got a couple of new podcasts, a couple of old podcasts for you. The first of the new is Eastern Standard Tribe by Cory Doctorow, and basically this is an audio serialization of his novel Eastern Standard Tribe. It features a near-future tribal warfare based on, get this, time zones. It's pretty cool. It's an interesting concept. You know, it's basically people forming alliances based on what sliver of time they're living in around the country rather than, say, ethnicity or political beliefs or whatever. I've heard about it before, but I never had a chance to read it. And now that it suddenly showed up in my RSS feed, I'm looking forward to giving it a try. In terms of old podcasts, we've got Roll 2D6. Episode 15 of this podcast focuses on Shea Geek, or rather the entire Shea series of games by Steve Jackson Games, including Shea Geek, Shea Greek, Shea Goth, Shea Dork. I think there's a Shea Army one out there, or I think it's Shea Grunt. You can check that out at www.roll2d6.com. And before I forget, Cory Doctorow's Dr. Rose. Yeah. You know, with the whole, like, cold thing going, my pronunciations are going to be even worse than normal this week. Anyway, you can check out Corey's stuff at craphound.com. Now, the other new podcast I've been listening to, particularly at work, just because it's good for providing a little bit of music relief and something just different from what I normally listen to, you know, my normal music or the various radio, internet radio stations I listen to, which is the show I'm trying desperately to get around to mentioning is Main Stage at the Monkey, which features alternative and/or geeky music by folks you've probably never heard of. I know I hadn't heard of them, but perhaps if you're geekier than me, you will have. You can go to subscribe to that feed at harpingmonkey.com. You can get it through the main feed, or you can subscribe to it individually. I played the promo for Random Signal, and there's a good reason for that. Jason is back with episode 54, which features music by Of Montreal, TV on the Radio, and, of course, Jonathan Colton. Also has discussions of comic books and social networking. It's great to hear Jason podcasting again. And, you know, usually when I hear a podcast from Jason, it inspires me to get my act together again. So you can thank him for keeping me on track. Finally, the last of the new podcasts would be Stealth Geek, in which one geek tries to describe how he is normal by day and geek by night. Recent podcast talks about how to geek out when you don't really have time to geek out. You can find it at www.artofbalance.net/thestealthgeek. I've only listened to one show, but so far I'm enjoying it. I certainly enjoy the concept. My day job allows me to be fairly geeky just about all the time, but you know, I can certainly relate to the whole not having enough time to do the geeky things that you really want to do.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing!
Now, back in the fall and the winter, I went on a massive reading jag, and I've talked about that before, and one of the books that I tore through, just completely tore through, I think I read this book in maybe a weekend, was A Deepness in the Sky by Werner Vinge. And if I'm mispronouncing that, well, we already went over that, didn't we? This book is a prequel to A Fire Upon the Deep, which I talked about in a previous podcast, and it takes place 40,000 years earlier and features one of its main characters, Pham Nguyen. Now, we'll get a little bit more into Pham later on. Now, the setup of the book is that for centuries, the mystery of the on-off star has teased humanity's collective imagination. As A Deepness in the Sky opens, starfleets from two human factions have just arrived in system, eager to learn its secrets and make contact with any civilizations that might call it home. Now, although this is set in the same universe as A Fire Upon the Deep, it's a little bit different. There was, if you'll remember from my review of A Fire Upon the Deep, that galaxy is basically divided into different zones of thought. And what you're able to do and what the physical rules are depend on what section of the galaxy you're in. So In A Fire Upon the Deep, most of the action took place in the upper levels where faster-than-light travel was capable of happening. In Deepness in the Sky, though, it's in the vast slowness, which is actually where humanity originates, and as a result, it's impossible to go faster than the speed of light, and humanity's fleets have to travel between the stars using basically, I don't remember exactly what propulsion they're using, but while it's a notable percentage of the speed of light, it still takes centuries to get from anywhere to anywhere. And I need to stop now because my son Lucas is crying, and that's the consequences of trying to do a podcast while I'm the only one home. So there's going to be a bit of a pause here, which you guys will not note because, hey, you're listening to this after it got edited, right? So, picking up where we left off, this whole book is taking place in what's called the slowness. You can't travel faster than the speed of light. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there is this star called the on-off star. And it's not really a pulsar, because what happens is that the star goes on for a certain number of decades and acts like a normal star, and then suddenly it just turns off. It goes stone cold. Like red dwarf cold, maybe even colder than that. Nah. And suddenly it's emitting very little light. So yeah, you may be able to hear Lucas here because now he's hanging out on my lap as well. But moving right along, the first of the two groups that gets there is called the Quen Ho, which is a group of capitalism-loving free traders who come looking for trade partners. Theirs is a far-flung civilization. It's too loosely organized to call it an empire that provides valuable links between the galaxy star systems. Their ships take centuries to arrive at new worlds, and most of that time is spent with their crew hibernating in cold sleep, but a few are usually up for the trip. And so they have this whole culture based on basically free broadcasts where they send technological broadcasts out to all of the star systems in the galaxy. Their idea being they want to get people as educated as possible, so they've got people to they have markets to sell their wares, and they want to try and keep the various star systems within the galaxy on an even keel, kind of keep everybody at about the same level, because, you know, it makes it easier to trade, right? You don't want to go from one system where there's complete barbarism to the next where it is highly advanced. And it also helps to even out the whole rise and fall of civilization. So the highly advanced civilization that suddenly collapses and 200 years later needs to rebuild itself can find these broadcasts and use them to quicken the pace of recovering what once was, which I thought was a really cool concept. Now, their rivals in the systems are the Emergents, who are a group of humans from a close-by solar system who claim to have come for similar reasons, but soon betray their competitors by launching a short, brutal war that destroys the Quen Ho leadership and most of its fleet. And that's not a major spoiler, because I think it happens within the first 20 pages. The Emergents seize the remaining Quen Ho, claiming their starships and crews and forcing them into a tyrannical communist system that served the Emergents well on the emergency on their home world that gave them their name. They also mentally enslave certain Quen Ho via Focus, a savant-like state brought on by a virus that turns ordinary people into geniuses, into super geniuses, but deprives them of much of their emotional range. They are exceptionally gifted within a particular area, say history, physics, organization, but everything else is ignored. I hope you all are enjoying this color commentary by Lucas as he, peeps up every once in a while. Anyway, the surviving Quen Ho struggle to retain what little freedom they can under the Emergents, while at the same time, a few of them plot a centuries-long plan to overthrow their new masters. Meanwhile, the star they came to observe is in its off phase, and they find that its sole terrestrial world, there are no gas giants, no asteroids, no Kuiper belt, is completely frozen solid. All of its air has frozen to the ground, and its cities are icy tombs. And there are cities, and their makers are not human. Studying the statues and books found there just prior to the war that erupts between these two human factions, they discover that the inhabitants are unlike anything that humanity has encountered before. Spider-like, multi-armed creatures that apparently fled deep into the planet to escape the world-encompassing cold. Once they seize control of the orbital fleets, the leaders of the Emergents begin formulating a plan to study and eventually conquer this new race when they emerge from their deepness. This is just an awesome book. I really enjoyed it. And it has a lot of just kind of great moments and great ideas in it. The concept of focus is brilliantly scary. Totalitarian regimes always run into problems maintaining a hold on their population while at the same time creating the innovations they need to keep their civilization going. You know, they'll nationalize all of the farms and then come up with this great plan that causes the farms to immediately begin to fail, thus causing widespread starvation and their ultimate eventual downfall. With the idea of focus, they can turn some of their slaves into basically super slaves, where they can solve the kinds of problems that need to be solved. And because they're kind of like computers, you know, the tyrants are okay with listening to what they have to say and following those instructions and basically using them to drive their society forward and to keep everything working. It's a yes. Yes, Lucas. Anyway, so focus was a cool and admittedly, you know, kind of scary idea. It's a genetically engineered virus thing that originally arose on the Emergent's own homeworld. And I liked that they used this idea to kind of explain how this society is able to keep itself going. Now, the evolution of the aliens, which are on the planet below, from a late 1800s technology through to the 21st century, makes for a great read, as does Vinge's adaptation of our tech to their circumstances. For the spiders, the greatest challenge is how to survive the coming cold of their star's off phase without resorting to the traditional hibernation state. And then you also have the situation of the spiders eventually, you know, will they or won't they, and how will they become aware of the humans who are orbiting above? And who will win? Will the Emergents succeed in their plan to take control of the world? Will the Kwung Ho find some way to finally get the upper hand? The Emergents are great villains, playing the mastermind card again and again as they outmaneuver their Kwung Ho captives. The concept of tyranny is so alien to the Kwung Ho that it takes them centuries to come up with an effective resistance. It's just the idea, you know, the two competing philosophical systems just come into conflict in such interesting ways in this book that I just really enjoyed it. Tham Nguyen epitomizes what a long-lived individual may truly look like, and he's easily one of the book's most engaging characters. Now, in the book that preceded this one, or well, eventually followed in the timeline, but in the original book, A Fire Upon the Deep, you didn't really know if Tham's history was real or imagined, because he was basically... Oh, really? Is that your opinion of this book? Okay, so anyway, you didn't know if Tham was real or if he was just kind of his history was real or if it was a construct of this godlike creature who made him. Turns out, mostly real. He is, what I particularly liked about him is his niche field of archaeological computing. Basically, the idea here is that he, when he first discovers the Kwung Ho, and actually when he kind of creates the Kwung Ho, Nguyen is actually from a barbarous world, one that had high technology but then saw it fail. And eventually the predecessors to the Kwung Ho arrive, and hoping to trade with them and discover, hey, wait, there's no market here. What the heck are we supposed to do? And somehow Nguyen ends up getting traded with these people. And I guess his father is thinking that he's going to be... He's basically bartering him away to these traders, thinking he's going to get some great advantage. But in fact, they're looking at it more as an opportunity for this kid to get off the planet. Anyway, so what happens is it gives him an opportunity to learn about all this technology and to see how this fledgling trading society operates. And he also finds that there is just thousands upon thousands of years worth of code that's built up. And no one really knows fully how it works. So he takes to going through the code and attempting to figure out what makes it tick, really. Well, that's a great comment, Luke. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Yeah, okay. So anyway, I thought that was awesome because, you know, just having worked at the places I've worked over the last couple of years, you can see this. You can see the code projects that just keep growing and growing and they keep adding new lines. And imagine what it's going to be like 2,000 years from now, where you may have programs that have actually been running unchanged for 1,000 years. That was the whole thing with Y2K, right? Was that everybody kind of anticipated that these programs would be gone by the year 2000 came around, but they were still there. And I think you're going to see the same thing. I mean, people joke about the Y3000, the 3002K, or the Y3K problem, right? I have to figure out my abbreviations there. But anyway, the Y3K problem. But you know what? It would not surprise me to find that there would be some lines of code written in 2000 that are running somewhere, somehow, in 3000. So anyway, Newell excels at going through this code, figuring out the nitty-gritty, figuring out the hidden little trap doors and stuff that lurk behind. And I just love that idea of a kind of a code archaeologist who's going out and finding all of the secrets and backdoors living within this massive amount of code. Now, another thing that I like to see, you know, I mean, you guys know kind of where my political leanings go, but it was nice to see capitalists as the good guys for change. You don't often get that. It was also nice to have a book that shows what a moral capitalist society would look like, one that's based on trade and non-aggression. Often when we see capitalists, they're caricatures, they're not fully fleshed out, or it's some sort of, you know, Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand knockoff. This, not like that. It was just, just a robust free trading society, and I thought that was really cool and very well done. The book's climax is satisfying and a bit surprising, with a big reveal that makes sense when you look back through the page to the book's earlier chapters. I don't want to talk about it too much, except to say that it is there. And as far as the bad goes, oh, are you getting tired, Luke? Really? Okay, well, we're almost done. As far as the bad goes, there really is no bad, despite Luke's color commentary there. This is the first book in a long time that I can see myself rereading. Some have complained about the lack of character depth and a certain humanization of the alien species, but I found the main characters to be well-rounded, and the humanization of the aliens, well, let's just say that it ultimately has a purpose. So I definitely recommend picking up this book. It's a great read. I found it to be a pretty fast read. Admittedly, I didn't really put it down for 3 or 4 days, so that's probably why it was a fast read for me. But I do think that it is worth checking out.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the other sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn. I wish I'd visited yogsothoth.com more often.
Yogsothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from yogsothoth.com.
So that'll do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope nobody minded the occasional little addition from one of the kidlets, like Lucas here, who's 9 months old and who's just starting to like to make himself be known. He's, you know, he's always made the little baby noises, but now he's actually trying to vocalize. He said dada once or twice. He doesn't actually know that it means dada, but, you know, always nice to hear the dada part, right? Coming up in Radioactive number 46, I'll have reviews of Midnight Syndicate's best of album, Out of Darkness, and the horror board game Betrayal at the House on the Hill. So yes, things will take a somewhat darker turn next time around. In Radioactive number 47, I'll focus on kids and gaming with an interview with my daughter Jordan, and I'll have a review of the excellent novel Learning the World. I'm always looking for comments, feedback, audio comments, promos, the whole shebang. You can send them to me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can also message me online. My username on Skype is Nuketown. And finally, if you want to friend me, you can find me at myspace.com/knuquist. A couple people have done that, so, you know, always looking for the new friends, right? Right, Luke? You got anything to say? You gonna say something? Or are you just gonna smile at me? Okay, that was more like Babyzilla than really saying something, but you know, whatever works. I'll talk to you all later.